Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On WNYC, and the revelations about Harvey Weinstein are also raising new questions about the Manhattan District Attorney, Cy Vance Jr., and his relationship to power and to campaign donations. Why didn't he prosecute Vance in 2015 when actress Ambra Batalana Gutierrez made a claim against Weinstein based on an incident in a New York hotel, and the NYPD had some really damning audio tape of one of their encounters at Weinstein's hotel room door? Here is a short excerpt.
Please, I'm not going to do anything. I swear my children. Please come in. On everything. I'm a famous guy.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable right now.
Please come in now. And 1 minute, and if you want to leave, when the guy comes with my jacket,
you can go. Why yesterday you touched my wrist?
Oh, please, I'm sorry. Just come on. I'm used to that. Come on.
Are you please. Used to that?
Yes, come in.
No, but I'm not used to that.
I won't do it again. Come on. Sit here. Sit here for a minute, please.
No, I don't want to.
If you do this now, you'll embarrass me.
I will.
Fine. You'll call me again. Okay? I'm sorry. I promise you I won't do anything.
I know, but yesterday was too
the
much
for me. I will never do another thing to you. 5 minutes. Don't ruin your friendship with me for 5 minutes.
I know, but it's kind of like, it's too much for me. I can't.
Please, you're making a big scene here.
No,
please.
But I want to leave.
Okay, goodbye. Thank you.
That was in March of 2015. And interestingly, this all comes to light just after the WNYC investigation into D.A. Vance's decision to reject prosecution of Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. for allegedly lying to investors about development of the Trump Soho Hotel after Vance's own assistant prosecutor recommended they file charges. In that case, Trump's lawyer, Mark Kasowitz, made donations to Vance before and after the decision. Only the one from before was returned. So suddenly, there are new questions about a Manhattan DA who is running for re-election this year unopposed. Might he be corrupt at worst or cowardly about taking prosecutions to powerful people, or maybe old boy biased in how he viewed Weinstein's behavior? There were also campaign contributions in that case. Maybe it's none of those things, but suddenly those questions are in play. My next guest is Bennett Gershman, who is a professor of law at Pace University. He was a prosecutor with the Manhattan DA's office. He was a special New York State prosecutor with the Anti-Corruption Office and the author of a treatise called Prosecutorial Misconduct. And he has an article in the Daily Beast today called Prosecutor Threw Away Slam Dunk Cases Against Weinstein and Trump Kids. Hi, Bennett. Thanks for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for inviting me, Brian.
You say a slam dunk case against Harvey Weinstein. D.A. Vance says not enough evidence to prosecute criminally, even though the behavior was creepy and he had that tape. Want to make your case?
Sure. With the evidence that I've read about and heard the tape, a New York jury would have convicted Harvey Weinstein in a New York minute of the charge of sexual abuse. There's absolutely no doubt about that. When you listen to this woman's narrative of what happened, and then you listen to the tape, it's absolutely clear beyond a shadow of a doubt that he engaged in sexual abuse with this young woman. And so, the decision by Mr. Vance not to prosecute and to say that the evidence is insufficient, it's astonishing. It's preposterous, and it absolutely doesn't make any sense.
It seemed, listening to the tape, that at the end of that exchange, he let her leave, but in the course of the exchange, he acknowledged to unwanted touching her breast in the previous encounter.
He acknowledged that, and she would testify not only that he touched her breast, but that he put his hands under her dress. And according, the police apparently believed her story. She came right away. She didn't wait and contrive. She came right away to the police. She made her complaint. They set up this meeting, and they recorded the conversation. And prosecutors typically don't have tape recordings of these kinds of sexual encounters. I'll make you a bet that with all of the dozens and dozens of encounters that Mr. Weinstein is alleged to have had with women for over the last dozen years or so, not one of those cases involved has, is there a tape of listening to Weinstein's propositioning and persevering and pushing and abusing a vulnerable woman to come into his room and join him in what I'm sure Weinstein hopes will be a sexual encounter.
Vance criticized the NYPD for not involving the DA's office in the taping of that encounter with Ms. Badalata Gutierrez. What didn't the NYPD do, and how does he say it relates to his decision not to prosecute?
Well, I haven't a clue. To me, the NYPD did everything they're supposed to do. Their special victims unit took over the case. They orchestrated the kinds of things that Ms. Gutierrez should say to Mr. Weinstein, and it worked out perfectly. I mean, the tape was, I don't know anything that would have changed this, this scenario. I don't know why the DA's office claims that somehow, because they were left out, it made the case weaker. There may be tension between the DA's office and the police in cases like this. I don't know that. I don't know what the protocols are. But I do know that the police, to me, did an excellent job here in investigating the case, getting evidence of the crime. And I don't see any reason why the DA should have, dismissed what the police did or suggested that they didn't do enough. They did far more than enough to make a very, very powerful case.
Do you know why they were taping in the first place? Had she gone to the NYPD after the previous encounter?
Exactly. I mean, she went right away to the a prompt complaint by a victim of sexual abuse, I think, counts a lot. It suggests that the victim didn't wait and think about and maybe contrive. I mean, the prompt complaint we look at as something that verifies the truthfulness of the victim's story, and the police took it seriously, obviously, and they set up this meeting, or she did, where she was recording the conversation. So the whole thing went, I would say, properly, correctly, and they made a slam dunk case against Mr. Weinstein. And so there's absolutely no reason I can think of why the district attorney would not go ahead with the case. Unless the DA said, well, it's a Class B misdemeanor, it's not a big deal, or Weinstein, it may be the reasons that you suggested, that we're dealing with power and a celebrity and high-powered lawyers. One of those lawyers was Mr. Vance's former partner. So the question of whether influence and money and power makes a difference, I mean, yeah, of course, that's really right on the table here.
What's the Harvey Weinstein, Cy Vance financial relationship?
Well, we know that that Weinstein's lawyer, I think it was David Boies, contributed to Vance's coffers. I haven't heard exactly whether Weinstein himself contributed. I wouldn't be surprised, obviously, if he did, but I don't know. I don't know that.
Now, in the Trump Soho case, Vance actually overruled his own assistant district attorney who recommended prosecution after their investigation into Donald Jr. and Ivanka lying to investors. We had our reporters on last week talking about their investigative report. Here's a little bit of what DA Vance said to them.
At the end of the day, I have to look at all the evidence and weigh all the factors as the lead of the office, and my name's on the indictment as to whether or not I feel this should be prosecuted as a crime. Not every lie is a crime.
Not every lie is a crime. And additionally, the DA said the victims weren't really victims. They didn't cooperate with their office, and they settled a civil suit on the matter. So what about that collection of defenses for why not to bring charges in that case?
I have a few comments. First of all, the lies that the Trumps told were bad lies. They were lies that drew in lenders and investors in their failed development. Lies matter to Mr. Vance's office. He prosecuted a tiny little bank in Chinatown. Of all the big banks that he could have prosecuted, he brought a 184-count indictment against Abacus Bank for failing to be honest with its borrowers. You're talking about like a Bailey Bank in the story, Christmas story. It was absolutely just unusual for this 184 count against this tiny little bank for conduct that seemed to be less nefarious than these other big banks. They were acquitted after spending millions and millions of dollars in their defense, after a long trial, which really destroyed a lot of people's lives and reputations. And he did the same thing with Dewey, the Dewey LaBouffe case, where he said that the reason he prosecuted was because the firm had misled investors into their precarious financial position. But that's exactly what the Trumps did. They misled investors into thinking that the development was really going well when it was tanking. And so you look at these different kinds of cases. The Trumps got off, but the Abacus Bank and Dewey didn't. Both of those prosecutions were fiascos for Vance's office. And, you have to wonder, does influence matter? Does power and celebrity matter with district attorneys? I'm not suggesting that Vance's office is for sale, but I'm suggesting that, justice has to operate fairly and impartially in actuality, but it also has to be seen by the public as behaving fairly and impartially and equally. And I think when you look at these cases and how Vance's office dealt with the Trumps and Weinstein, and then you look at a bunch of other cases involving anonymous people who are poor, who don't have high connections and powerful lawyers, and you sort of wonder about whether the justice system is in fact skewed in favor of certain kinds of influential people. These cases make you wonder. They're troubling, for sure.
My guest is Bennett Gershman, Pace University law professor, a former prosecutor with the Manhattan DA's office, and a prosecutor with the Special New York State Anti-Corruption Office. He wrote a treatise called Prosecutorial Misconduct in the past, and he has an article in the Daily Beast now that argues that Cy Vance, the Manhattan DA, had slam dunk cases, in our guest's opinion, against both Harvey Weinstein and Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump in the Trump Soho case, but didn't bring charges for possible reasons that we're talking about. But not everybody agrees with his interpretation, and Lisa in Manhattan wants to push back a little bit, I think. Lisa, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay, great. I'm not certain I'm pushing back. I'm just sort of confused. Numerous legal commentators on CNN and the like have said that Vance was correct because he couldn't establish mens rea, which I guess is that Weinstein believed he was committing a crime. Is that correct? Why is that necessary for rape? And whatever happened to ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Bennett?
Yes, no. That's a proper point. The only element that you have to show for sexual abuse is that the person who did it made sexual contact with somebody's sexual parts of her body. The person didn't consent, and that it was done for sexual gratification. Now, that's all you have to show. That's the mens rea that we're talking about. So when you listen to her story and you listen to the tape, I think it would be impossible for Weinstein to seriously argue that it was accidental, that he didn't mean to touch her breasts, that he did it to see whether they were fake or not. I mean, some kind of preposterous claim that he could make, which to me, after listening to the tape, would be rejected by a jury in a second. But so that's the intent we're talking about. I mean, the intention for rape is the intention to have forcible sexual intercourse with somebody. That's all you have to show. I mean, we can't x-ray people's minds to know why they're doing it, but you have to show that the person engaged, if we're talking about rape, let's say, in forcible intercourse, and that the person knew what they were doing. That's all you have to do. The intention is the intention to have forcible intercourse.
And it's not like he could claim that he didn't know the law. I know ignorance of the law is not supposed to be a defense, but it certainly would not be, in this case, even feasible that he would say, the intent to engage in unwanted touching, I didn't know that was a crime.
He can't say that. He can't say that. Ignorance of the law is never an excuse.
And this brings us to another case we haven't even touched on yet that goes back a few years. Sarah in Hamilton Heights is going to bring that one up. Hi, Sarah, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that, you know, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, early on in Vance's tenure, where somebody, an incredibly powerful, incredibly wealthy man, apparently raped a maid. And if you remember, that case was just it completely imploded. So that's one issue with Vance. And also, I'm glad you brought up the Abacus Bank issue. There was a great Frontline documentary about that, which you can still watch online. It was called Abacus, Small Enough to Jail. So there are a number of issues where he has gone after smaller people who are not as powerful and then given a pass to the wealthy and the powerful. And, you know, there is a write-in candidate, Mark Fleidner, for DA in Manhattan. So I just want to add that as well.
Yes, and he came in third in the Brooklyn DA primary last week. Apparently he can run in Manhattan, even though he lives in Brooklyn. He says the law is you can run in any borough as long as you live in New York City. It's too late for him to get on the ballot, but because of all this publicity, the very things that we're talking about, Mark Fleidner has thrown his name into the hat as a write-in candidate as of just the other day for Manhattan DA. There is no candidate in any party, I believe, who's actually on the ballot against Cy Vance next month. Sarah, thank you very much. How do you see the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case? Because he was bringing charges in that one, right?
Listener mentioned it. Dominique Strauss-Kahn case was another one of, I believe, Mr. Vance's fiascos. He pulled Strauss-Kahn off the plane. They immediately had him charged and demanded no bail, sent him to Rikers Island. In other words, they rushed the case through very quickly, and then as they started to examine the case, Vance's office realized that the complaining witness had so many credibility issues that the case could not be sustained. There was DNA evidence that supported the defense claim that it was consensual sex, and his office had to ultimately throw in the towel and explain that there was no basis to continue the case. I don't claim that Mr. Vance or his office for sale. I don't think that they commit misconduct. If you want to talk about deliberate violations of rules, I don't claim that. I don't think his office is known for that. But I think that from all of the cases we've talked about, whether Strauss-Kahn or Dewey or Abacus Bank or the Trump case and this Weinstein case, it just shows terribly bad judgment. And for me, prosecutors have to exercise sound judgment. They have enormous discretion, meaning that they can make all sorts of decisions that can destroy people's lives, as we know, or their reputations. And these decisions, they have incredible consequences, and so they have to be very, tuned to not only how they exercise discretion, and also, cases that we don't even know about. I mean, we wouldn't have known about the Trump case. We wouldn't have known about the Weinstein case ordinarily, because these cases are secret, and only because certain information came to public, whether it was a scoop by the New Yorker and NYC and ProPublica or the New York Times. The way prosecutors use their discretion is the most powerful, I think, power that any government official has.
I want to come back and dig in a little bit more on the contrast that you've made, that the last caller made, that some other lawyers are making, between what might be Vance's deference to power, at least in these two cases, and his willing to prosecute the powerless. A letter to the New York Times by a lawyer from the Bronx Defenders nonprofit attorney group says, in the South Bronx, people are routinely charged with crimes based on nothing more than the word of an accuser. There is rarely an audio tape. Prosecutors regularly proceed with charges despite the lack of corroborating evidence if they have a cooperative complainant, satisfied it's enough that the accuser said it happened. Obviously, they have that in this case. And Vance doesn't prosecute in the Bronx. That letter is about the Bronx in particular, but the writer, the lawyer, is drawing attention to prosecutors in general. More specific to Vance is this. There was a controversial sweep of a Manhattan housing project in connection with alleged gang and drug activity. You may remember, Vance defended that like this on this program at the time.
We have a problem, and you cannot sit by and continue to have neighborhoods terrorized and people shot in neighborhoods. You have to act. The big picture is also always that we believe that prevention is as important as enforcement. So we absolutely, when we complete a enforcement action, we need to make sure that we are speaking with the community and trying to put something back into the community.
We believe that prevention is as important as enforcement. Somehow he wasn't accusing himself of preventive detention, which I don't think is constitutional. But I don't want to make charges based on anecdotal rather than systematic evidence. He also has policies designed to align with criminal justice reform to move away from mass incarceration. Cy Vance, talks about that a lot. So do you have an opinion about this case and the contrast that, on the surface anyway, it seems to present?
I want to agree that Mr. Vance has done some important initiatives for criminal justice reform, and he's spread, a windfall of forfeiture money to district attorney's offices around the country for various law enforcement reforms, and he gets credit for that. But in terms of prevention, you have to ask yourself the question, why does he go after certain cases in one way and go after other cases or not go after other cases in another way? I mean, I think, again, it's important. The public has to trust your law enforcement, whether it's the police or whether it's the prosecutor's office, as doing the right thing, as behaving fairly and impartially. And when you see cases like Weinstein and the Trumps, the public has to wonder, is that the way it's working, or does, power and celebrity and money and high-powered lawyers and connections and stuff like that, does it matter? These cases are the great examples of at least to the public's perception. Yes, it does matter. And, if you're anonymous and poor and underprivileged and all that, you're going to be treated in the criminal justice system one way. If you have high-powered lawyers and you are a celebrity and you do have, connections, you might be prosecuted or not prosecuted. So that's really, really troubling. Mr. Vance has not really done enough to assuage, that troubling perception.
There were campaign donations in both the Weinstein case and the Trump kids case. Shouldn't call them kids because they were absolutely grown-ups responsible for their own behavior, but they're children of the president. There were campaign donations around both of those cases, and now the DA himself has come out, and maybe it's too little too late for his reputation not to take a hit from all this, but come out with a proposed reform. What do you think the firewall should be?
I think that prosecutors, district attorneys, they can receive contributions, fundraising and giving contributions is protected speech, but I think that they should not know the identity of the donor. I would like to conceal the identity of the donor from the district attorney and let him use the money but not know who gave it to him. I think that's important because it's just too troubling to see people who give a lot of money, like Mr. Kazowitz. He gave over $50,000, and he had other people give money. And then he's in the office with Vance talking about a case of his. That just smells, And so my reform would be to conceal the identity of donors from prosecutors, from judges, from all of these people who exercise a lot of power and can be, influenced.
Even
unconsciously.
Bennett Gershman is a former prosecutor with the Manhattan DA's office. He's now a law professor at the Elizabeth Haub School of Law at Pace University. And he's got an article in the Daily Beast today called "Prosecutor Threw Away Slam Dunk Cases Against Weinstein and Trump Kids." Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.